ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 99 of the report. Yeah, man. Creeping up on that young 100 mark. And I can't wait to get that number up under my belt. It's been a long time coming. And yeah, man, it's probably be like 6 years since I started this podcast, and I'm just now getting close to crossing that 100 threshold, man. But it takes a lot of work to do this, man. It takes a lot of work, but I'm excited, man. It's 2016, man. It's a brand new year, brand new opportunities available to everybody, man. A brand new start for quite a few folks, man. I know a lot of people are real cynical about New Year's resolutions and, you know, why wait for a calendar or a day on the calendar to change before you decide you want to do something for yourself. But at the same time, because I used to be that guy, right? But at the same time, man, anytime you just take the time out for yourself and decide that you want to do something better for yourself, or you got some new opportunities that you want to pursue and everything else, man, by all means, you don't need a reason to, you know, you don't have to justify that to anybody else. Do what you need to do. And if it's New Year's and you want to do it on that new year, then by all means, go ahead and do what you need to do for that, right? Yeah, man. And, you know, for me, this year brings some new opportunities, definitely, man. You know, financially and creatively with this show and some other things coming down the pike as far as podcasting is concerned for me. And yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm excited about 2016, man, and what this year is going to bring. I got a few things, man, because I've been off of the mic for quite some time. And, you know, I gotta speak to a lot of this stuff, right? Because so many things have happened since the last time I was on the mic. You know, I know the last time I talked to you guys, I spoke a lot about R. Kelly and, you know, that whole deal and everything else. But, of course, I'm going to have to talk about another black icon, so to speak, as far as, you know, criminal behavior or criminal charges being filed and whatnot. Of course, we're talking about Bill Cosby. I will dive into that later on in the show. But of course, I'm going to talk a little bit about the show Making a Murderer on Netflix. I've completed that series. So if you have not completed that series, you may want to turn this off and listen after you've completed that series, because I am going to have some spoilers for you while I discuss that. I'm telling you this up front now so you don't get pissed at Span for saying that, man, you fucked that up for me. You ruined my show. You know what I mean? So go on ahead right now. If you haven't finished Making a Murderer, just go ahead and put this on pause, or just, you know, it's a podcast. You can watch this shit whenever you want to, right? Or you can listen to it whenever you want to. So go ahead and hit that pause button and complete that series before you come back and listen to this, right? So there's that. Also, I'm going to give a slight movie review of Chi-Raq, because I did finally get an opportunity to see that movie. And I know I held a lot of my reservations or a lot of my concerns back because I hadn't seen the movie. So I've had an opportunity to see the movie, and I'm going to talk about what I think about that as well. Also, man, President Obama has announced that he's going to sign an executive order to try to enforce more background checks on gun sales. And, you know, of course, the right wing and the NRA has kind of lost their shit as far as that is concerned. So we definitely going to talk a little bit about that. Also, we got some good gun news, right? We also have some good gun news as it relates to someone actually being able to protect themselves using illegally owned firearms. So we're definitely going to get into that. And we're going to talk about Tamir Rice. And, you know, the fact that the Cuyahoga prosecutor, Ted McGinty, declined to actively seek an indictment against the police officer who took that young man's life. So we're going to talk about that and the reaction to that decision as well. And of course, like I said, we're going to get into some Cosby. We're going to get to some Cosby later on, right? But before I get into that, of course, I got to tell you guys how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show and, of course, respond in kind. You can also email the show. The feedback, the email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. Of course, I'll read those and respond to those here on the show as well. You can also chop it up with your man on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. That's Mr_Span. So chop it up with me there. Send me your asshat of the week submissions, man. Send them to asshat@thespanreport.com. That's the email address for the asshat of the week submissions. I know sometimes folks send me submissions through other means, but if you want your asshat submission to be read here on the show or to be considered for the show, you got to send it to asshat@thespanreport.com. All right. Also, do your man a solid. It's 2016. Reviews are important for podcasts. They really are. And do your man a solid. Help me out. Help grow the show. Put in on the show. You know, this is your way of putting in on the show. So go to iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Preferably leave your man a 5-star review on both of those platforms. 5-star review is very much helpful. Of course, you can leave whatever review you like, but the ones who leave me the 5-star reviews, those are the ones that will get read on the show. So by all means, man, go ahead and leave me a 5-star review or whatever review on iTunes. But the 5-star reviews get read here on the show, and it's very much appreciated. And I thank you in advance for doing that. And for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. That's where you go for everything Span Report. It's your one-stop shop for the podcast. It's your one-stop shop for watching videos associated with the podcast. All of my guest appearances, everything, man. Everything is available at thespanreport.com. You can even check out a few of the friends of the show on thespanreport.com and links to all of them, guys. So go ahead to thespanreport.com for your one-stop shop of everything Span Report. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah, man. Yeah, man, it's been an interesting couple weeks since the last time I was on the mic, man. Real interesting couple weeks. I know one of the biggest things that's going on right now is this whole thing with the Powerball. And, you know, everybody is buying tickets for the Powerball. And I can't necessarily say that I blame you, even though the likelihood of any one of us winning the Powerball is minuscule, especially if you think about trying to win it by yourself. It's very minuscule, right? The chances of you winning that, you have a much better chance of being hit by an asteroid than you have of winning the Powerball and getting all of that money, right? But you got to be in it to win it, right? Got to be in it to win it. So, you know, what was that, last week, or not even last week, Wednesday, I went to, I came home from work, man. I was still in my work uniform and everything, and I went and I was like, you know what, on my way home from work, I'm going to stop and get something to eat, and I'm going to stop and get some beer, and I'm going to stop and get some lottery tickets, right? I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to be in it so I can win it, right? And so I go to this liquor store not too far from my place, and there's this older lady who's there. And she's got the counter filled with all of the Powerball, like, play slips, right? You know, the little slips that you fill out, the bubbles and everything else to pick your numbers and whatnot, right? So she's doing her thing, and I'm standing there just pretty much waiting for either her to get finished or, you know, the clerk to come and kind of service her and everything else. But I'm just standing there patiently waiting. And as she's doing the, you know, the slips and whatnot, you know, some more guys come in, you know, and they specifically came in just to play the lottery. So there's a line that kind of formed up, and this lady, she's still standing in the front of the line, and she's filling out the slips and everything. And again, she's got a lot of these fucking slips, right? And so the clerk finally walks up to the machine, and he asks anybody, were they ready with their lottery numbers? Are you ready so that he can go ahead and get the numbers and start this whole process? And, you know, I'm the next in line. I said, well, you know, I'm ready. And this older lady, she's old enough to be my grandmother, right? So I would call her granny, right? But she's just like, you just gonna act like I ain't standing here, huh? And I'm just like, whoa, okay. And, you know, the clerk is trying to, he's trying to, like, you know, kind of tie the situation down, you know, tamp it down a little bit. He's like, oh no, ma'am, it's nothing like that. You know, I see you still filling out your slips. You know, these guys look like they were, you know, they just got home from work and whatnot, just trying to get the line moving. And she's just like, well, whatever. Go ahead, let these motherfuckers through then. And I'm still just like, whoa. Like, what is she so pissed about? She's still filling out slips. She's not done with all of her numbers and everything else. So, I'm just like, fuck it. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and like, yo, man, give me 8 easy picks. And give me the 8 easy picks with the multiplier. I seldom play the lottery. I don't play, and I only play a lot of times when the jackpot gets big, right? So I'm like, yeah, man, give me 8 easy picks with the multiplier or whatnot. And this lady turns and says to me, you ain't gonna win. You don't even know how to play. Picking easy picks and shit. And I'm just like, who fucked with you? Like, who hurt you? Like, why are you going so hard right now? Why are you going so hard? And she went on to say, like, it's strategy to the shit and everything else. And I'm trying to think, you know, this lady is old enough to be my grandmother. So I'm trying not to curse her out. But at the same time, it's like, if there was so much strategy to this game, then why the hell are you still here playing this game? Why hadn't you won yet? Why are you fucking with me? Like, I feel so ashamed that I wanted to punt this old lady right out of the goddamn liquor store, right? Really, really, really disrespectful old lady, right? But I guess it kind of goes into the whole thing of the fact that, like, when you get a little older, man, you have a few less fucks to give. And I can see that this lady had she was just completely out of them for the day, right? So, you know, my thing was, hey, okay, I got my lottery tickets. Let me pay for my beer, get the fuck out of here, and I hope this lady didn't spend all her money at the damn lottery machine buying Powerball tickets, right? But yeah, man, that's just one of those random things that kind of happened to me during the week, man. Trying to get Powerball tickets, man, is crazy, right? And yeah, man, of course there was some things that happened at the job, man. You know, we got some changes as far as crews and whatnot is concerned. So people are a bit pissed about whether or not they're on the right crew, whether or not they can make money on this crew, and it's a whole lot of shit. I'm not going to even get into the work shit. I'm not talking about work, right? But yeah, man, yeah, that shit happened, man. The whole Powerball thing, that's crazy. That's crazy. And I think they have the drawing for tonight, and I need to get my Powerball ticket. So after I get off of the mic, I'm going back to the store, and I'm going to get me some more tickets, too. You got to be in it to win it, and goddamn it, I need some money, too, right? Yeah, man, yeah. Another thing, man, like, I'm going to just go ahead and segue this into talking about murder, right? Because I had an opportunity while, you know, during the holiday break to kind of binge watch Making a Murderer on Netflix, right? And it was an entertaining docuseries. It at times left you upset, at times left you hopeful, and at times, well, hopeful for Stephen Avery that he may... he may find some semblance of justice, right? And, you know, the funny thing about it is that as I watched that series, you know, you leave that series with the sense of Stephen Avery was a man being set up, or he was set up. You leave that series with that thought. And so many people, after watching that series, have gone to, I think it's change.org, and they petitioned President Obama to pardon Stephen Avery and his nephew, I think is Brendan Dassey, for the murder of Mrs. Halbach. I forget her name right at this moment. As a matter of fact, let me do my due diligence and pull her name up now. Just a second. Let me do this. Okay. I don't know why it's not here. It's like, it's right in front of me. I had it right in front of me, but I know her last name is Halbach, right? And so Stephen Avery was accused of murdering Miss Halbach, you know, on his property, and his family owned an auto salvage yard and everything else. And so Stephen Avery was a person who in Manitowoc County, Wisconsin, had been previously wrongfully convicted and sentenced, well, he had served 18 years in prison for the wrongful, I think it was a rape charge that he was charged with, right? And he was in prison for 18 years wrongfully, and it came out that someone else was actually responsible for the rape that Stephen Avery was in prison for. And so you get the sense of what Stephen Avery was, you know, he was going through this whole thing of he was suing the county for wrongful imprisonment. He was suing the county, I believe it was the county sheriff's office for pretty much railroading him with that rape charge. And so he was in the middle of suing the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Department for, I believe it was like $36 million. And so when this Halbach woman became missing, and they found her vehicle on Stephen Avery's family's property, he became a prime suspect, right? And you saw, you know, as you watch the series, you see how a lot of this stuff played out, how they, the police department, had people who were actually searching on the property that did not necessarily need to be on the property or weren't supposed to be on the property, how the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Department wasn't actually supposed to be a part of the investigating team or the search team on that particular search and everything, you know, that they searched his property for 8-9 days, and they found something on like the 4th or 5th day after they had already been on the property numerous times and hadn't found anything prior to. So like the way that the series plays out, you really get the sense of Stephen Avery and his nephew, Brendan Dassey, who also was coerced into giving a confession. You get the sense that they were being railroaded, right? And it's one thing, it's kind of, one thing I found interesting about it was how the series kind of took hold in the, it became sort of like a pop culture phenomenon in the sense of how people really looked at this, and they looked at how law enforcement can overstep their bounds, right? And it was interesting because we've had this Black Lives Matter movement going on for a couple of years now, which was always speaking to the misconduct and the overreach of the police departments, right? And it was interesting to see some of the people who were now joining in on the narrative of police overreach when it concerns Stephen Avery. And it was one of those things for me as I was watching it, is like, well, you know what? It's kind of hard for me to have the level of sympathy that I probably would have for Stephen Avery if the same level of sympathy and empathy was given to people who look like me, who are dealing with these things all the time, and they got this level of outcry outside of just Black folks saying it, right? Because the same thing is happening to, you know, a person such as a Stephen Avery, right? But not so much to the point where hundreds of thousands of people are filling out petitions to President Obama to have their killer or the killer or the alleged killer released from prison, right? And so it was, you know, I kind of watched it under that lens that I'm going to watch this play out, and sure enough, it looks as if he's being railroaded. But at the same time, in a time where we have a Black Lives Matter movement that is always trying to bring about accountability for police overreach, and they're always rebuffed. Always rebuffed. Everybody kind of, you know, they talk about the conversation tends to go to black on black crime and everything else. So I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, I'm not really as sympathetic to Stephen Avery as I probably should be, right? And so I'm wondering how now, you know, I'm looking at it like this. I'm like, maybe, just maybe, a lot of people will probably take a second look at this American criminal justice system to find out how we can stop things like this from happening, how we can hold law enforcement accountable in ways where these things don't happen again. And we take heed to calls of oversight for those who would put on the badge and those who are charged to serve and protect, right? So, you know, I kind of looked at it from that lens, right? But one of the things that I thought was also interesting was I did a little reading about the case after I watched the series, because again, after you watch the series, you have this idea that Stephen Avery was railroaded and he's an innocent man, right? And some people will probably, even after I say some of the things that weren't presented in the documentary, we'll probably still walk away feeling that way, right? So it's interesting how that series played out, and when you leave it, you think this man's being railroaded. But some of the things that weren't presented in the documentary was this. And this is from, was this Pajaba? I'm sorry. I'll leave a link on thespanreport.com so you guys can check out this particular article here. But in this article, they talk about some of the things that weren't actually presented in the Netflix documentary. And one of the things they said was that the documentary said that part of Avery's criminal past included animal cruelty. Now, we did remember that Stephen Avery was they kind of brushed over the fact that Stephen Avery threw a cat into a bonfire. It says, to my recollection, it didn't specify exactly what animal cruelty was. I know that for some of our readers, knowing is enough to want to see Avery get the death sentence, regardless of whether he murdered Halbach. He doused a cat in oil and threw it in a bonfire. This is not relevant to the murder trial, but it certainly diminishes the sympathy some of us may have felt for him, right? Also, there was past criminal activity, also including threatening a female relative at gunpoint that at one point Stephen Avery was guilty of doing as well. In the months leading up to Halbach's disappearance, Avery had called Auto Trader several times and always specifically requested that Halbach come out and take the photos, right? So the way that it's kind of presented in the story on Making a Murderer, you would have thought that it was a random kind of thing that a Halbach, you know, kind of showed up at the Avery property to take pictures of that van. Not, you know, because they didn't necessarily show us that Stephen Avery had called for this woman to come out repeatedly, right? Okay, and also it says that Halbach had complained to her bosses that she didn't want to go out to the Avery trailer anymore because when she came out, Avery was waiting for her wearing only a towel. This was excluded for being too inflammatory in the documentary. Avery clearly had an obsession with Halbach. Also, on the day that Halbach went missing, Avery had called her phone three times, twice from a Star 67 number to hide his identity. And this goes back into how far back in the hood or how far back the story goes. I can't tell you the last time I used Star 67, right? But yeah, he tried to conceal the fact that it was him calling, and she was really apprehensive about going out to the Avery property. She felt that something was amiss when it came to Stephen Avery, and she didn't want to go, and she complained to her bosses for making her go. Also, the bullet with Halbach's DNA on it came from Avery's gun, which was always hung above his bed, right? So, you know, there's that. Then there's also Avery had purchased handcuffs and leg irons like the ones Dassey described, holding Halbach only 3 weeks before. Avery said he purchased them for use with his girlfriend, Jody, with whom he had a tumultuous relationship. At one point, he was ordered by police to stay away from her for 3 days. Now, that the way that it's presented in the documentary, Stephen Avery is, you know, that's his rock. You know, they were together like thick. They were like thieves, like they were thick as thieves, right? Like she was really dedicated to him. And you don't get the sense that they were having trouble. You get the sense that she was really dedicated to him, and it was only until the laws kind of interfered with them that she decided that it was too much for her and she walked away. That's not exactly how it plays out, right? And so, also, here's a piece of evidence that was presented at trial, but not in the series, that was most convincing. In Dassey's illegally obtained statement, Dassey stated that he helped Avery move the RAV4 into the junkyard and that Avery had lifted the hood and removed the battery cable. Now, even if you believe the blood in Halbach's car was planted by cops, there was also non-blood DNA evidence on the hood latch. I don't believe the police would plant, or this is the person who's writing this, I don't believe that the police would plant or know how to plant that type of evidence, right? And there's a whole lot of different things, man. There's a whole lot of different things that we didn't get a chance to see in Making a Murderer that could actually lead one to believe that Stephen Avery probably did do that shit, right? And of course, there were some other things that were pretty much fucked up and illegal, like I said, the illegally obtained confession that the police got from his nephew, Brendan Dassey, which kind of incriminated Stephen Avery. And but at the same time, there's so many other things that we don't get a chance to see and that weren't presented in the story, which would lead you to kind of think a little bit differently about what that situation was and how it played out and whether or not Stephen Avery is worthy of being able to have a petition reached the president of the United States for him to be released from prison, right? So, yeah, man, it's an interesting story. It's an interesting way to tell the story. It's basically a way to keep you watching. There's a lot of things that they didn't present to keep you watching the show, right? So, yeah, man, whether or not Stephen Avery did it, you know, I'm kind of leaning on him like I do Cosby, like I do R. Kelly. Yeah, I'm believing his ass did it. You know, especially with the evidence that was not presented, the evidence that was left out of the story for the sake of the story to be compelling enough for you to watch it for 10 episodes, right? So, yeah, man, Stephen Avery did it, and it also makes me kind of wonder about how we view the American criminal justice system and how America as a whole would view the American criminal justice system. Because, again, you juxtapose this with the Black Lives Matter movement, who's been calling for community oversight and checks and balances when it comes to police and how they deal with the public, man. And then on top of that, you just kind of think of, well, if Stephen Avery was racist, especially with a lot of black folks, if Stephen Avery was racist, would you really be would you really care? you're like, nah, he did that shit, right? And he did that shit. If he was racist, you'd have thought he did it. So, I mean, it's compelling television to watch. I watched the entire thing over 2 days, man. And yeah, man, it leaves you thinking that Stephen Avery was wronged. And to a large degree, he probably was wronged. But at the same time, I still think he did it. Right? Yeah, man. So that's my opinion on that. But now let's move on to some other shit that I wanted to talk about. And it was another thing that me and Gates kind of debated about a little bit when it concerned Black Lives Matter and Chicago kept coming up, was the movie Chi-Raq, right? Now, I got a chance to see Chi-Raq on November 29th or December 29th. I believe it was December 29th. It was the first day it was available for digital download on Google Play and iTunes and wherever else. And I got a chance to watch it. And again, like, I want to be transparent here. I had my reservations about this movie before I saw it. I watched a 2-minute trailer and I had some concerns. I was kind of giving it a bit of a side eye. I'm like, I don't know about this shit. And then I said, I'm going to reserve my judgment for when I see the movie, right? I've seen the movie. I think it was hot fucking garbage. I think it was utter bullshit. It was one of those movies where, you know, a lot of times folks talk about Spike Lee movies and there's a message behind the movie. A lot of times you have to get this. There's a bit of preachiness that comes to a Spike Lee film, whether or not it's School Days or whether or not it's She's Gotta Have It or Girl Six or She Hates Me and everything else. Right. There's always like an underlying message with the movies. And one of the biggest things that I picked up overall with this movie was the amount of respectability politics that were involved in this movie. That's part of the reason why I believe that this movie got such great reviews from, movie critics, so to speak, because it kind of absolves white people to some degree of the role that they do play in some of the conditioning or some of the conditions that result in what happens in Chicago and what happens in Detroit or what happens in New York or what happens in New Orleans or what happens in wherever, you know, whatever city is dealing with inner city crime. It kind of gives them that absolution. They're like, you know what? Yeah, they have to go ahead and pull themselves up by their bootstraps, right? That's a lot of what respectability politics is. It kind of absolves I don't want to say the ruling power, but those who are in positions of privilege, let's just say that those who are in positions of privilege, kind of absolves them of their role in this and in how this goes. Right. And another thing, too, is I kind of think that if Spike Lee had gone the route of a movie or even a documentary and called it Chi-Raq, I wouldn't have had any, I can't even say that I would even have had issue with the name if it would have been somewhat of a documentary series that actually examined the conditions in Chicago which result in the violence that happens in Chicago now, as opposed to making a satire or a comedy with ridiculous bullshit, I'm getting worked up. There was a scene in this movie where Lysistrata is trying to take over an armory and she has to seduce this Confederate flag waving Southern racist general and have him get butt naked on a cannon in order for them to take control of the armory, all right? Really ridiculous. Really ridiculous. There's the there's this one scene where outside of the armory where they have one soldier who's losing his mind because he can't get any pussy. Right? Really ridiculous. You have the scene with Dave Chappelle, who is, you know, a strip club owner, and there isn't any strippers who could, because the strippers are also on strike as far as not giving anybody any sex is concerned, or even giving them dances are concerned. Really ridiculous scene. Or even Wesley Snipes' caricature of a character, Cyclops. Really goofy. Nick Cannon's portrayal of Chirac. His name is Chirac in the movie. Really goofy. It's almost like a caricature of the conditions of what's going on in Chicago. And what really, what's going on in Chicago ain't fucking funny. It's not fucking funny. So when you say that you doing this to save lives, and you, of course, you, yeah, okay, I use some of the mothers who had lost their children. I had them holding up signs at the end of my movie, and they were holding up signs about their lost children. Yeah, but this is right before you have a scene where the first person who comes, because the Lysistrata and Chirac get together for a showdown, and the showdown is them fucking to see who comes first. And you then follow that up with, now these mothers are coming in and they have their signs with their dead children, and Chirac then breaks down and says, I'm the one who killed your baby. Come on, man. There were so many other different ways that you could have went that would have been respected, especially from people from Chicago. Because a lot of people from Chicago are pissed, and justfully so. It was a bullshit movie, man. It was lazy, and you made fun of it. Whether folks would actually take heed to that or not is irrelevant to me. He made fun of the situation. He could have actively and actually examined the conditions and the history of how Chicago got to where it is today. And it would have been a much more respected piece of work than the bullshit that he brought us this past December. Right? Now, I know there's a lot of folks who, well, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was good. And it was a message of, you know, we're going to be respected by anybody, man. We got to respect ourselves. We got to stop shooting ourselves. We got to stop doing this. We got to stop doing that. Yeah, that sounds good. Examine why it is the way it is. Examine that. Figure out how we got to this point. And then present what you would deem, or present some solutions. Right? And a sex strike just isn't a solution, right? It even kind of overstates the effectiveness of a sex strike. I hate that I'm missing this lady's name right now, but that it kind of overstates what the effectiveness of what that sex strike did. I believe it was over in Africa, and I hate that I'm drawing a blank on this shit right now. But the movie itself, I give it 2 stars. And again, like I said, I thought the concept of the movie was ridiculous. I thought the presentation of the movie was ridiculous. About the only redeeming qualities that this movie has for me would be Tayana Parrish. And I hate to like objectify the sister in this way, but she was fine as hell. Right. And Angela Bassett, who really did, who did what Angela Bassett does. And that's bringing in a great performance, despite the material of what she's given in this movie. So, yeah, man, Chirac was a bit of bullshit. The premise was bullshit. The view of Chicago, and I know a lot of folks, that was another thing too I kept hearing. People kept saying that, well, this movie isn't about just Chicago, it's about everywhere. It's like, well, you know what? He could have just made a movie in some generic named ass town and did just the same thing. But you place the movie in Chicago and you call the movie Chirac and then say, well, this movie isn't just about Chicago. Man, fuck you. So, and fuck him for what he did to NBA 2K16. That was trash, too. Fuck Spike. Motherfucker. All right. yeah, man. That shit just kind of pissed me off all over again, man. But what we doing right now is we're going to bring back the asshat of the week.
Yo! We got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And this week's ass hat of the week is none other than Andrea Tentaros of Fox News. And the reason that she is the ass hat of the week is President Obama announced that he would be signing an executive order to expand background checks for all gun purchases in the United States, right? And during the announcement of this new executive order, Obama spoke about the Newtown shooting and how it moved him and how it upset him that that happened under his presidency. He called it the worst day of it, one of the worst days of his presidency, right? And so Andrea Tinteros and a lot of people on the right were a bit skeptical of the tears that Obama shed during this this particular press conference. And they went to, I believe it's Fox and Friends, and they spoke about it. Here it is.
He listed some of the times in which he feels that our inalienable rights for the pursuit of joy and happiness and so on and so forth were robbed. Aurora, Colorado, the movie theater shooting, the mass shooting at Santa Barbara, outside of UC Santa Barbara, Newtown, Connecticut, Columbine. And lastly, he said, and teared up as he talked about it, his own home city of Chicago. And then a turn from those tears that the president wiped away on his face back to politics and telling people that voters need to remember, come election time, which leaders are standing in the way of gun safety, in his opinion.
I think when I watched that, what was really upsetting was the tears that he wiped away again and again. Yeah. You want that for, I mean, we feel frightened about what's going on with ISIS. And he can't pull that kind of passion for anything but this. And I feel bad about those kids in Connecticut without question. I mean, your heart breaks for them.
Right.
But it's only about this that he gets so upset about and never about terror.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day.
Well, many of us cried big tears the day that Sandy Hook happened. There have been so many times that we've had our hearts broken. But as we come back out to the couch, it was interesting to see the reactions among some of you when the president teared up. Why was that, Andrea?
Well, because if you really cared about an issue, especially like Chicago in his hometown, and it was plausible, he would be doing something very different than he's doing, and he would have spoken out a long time ago. I mean, this is how many years? Almost 8 years? He's almost at the end of his term. And you haven't heard him go to Chicago and really speak out about this issue, and he is uniquely poised to do so, really. But everything he's doing won't solve the problem. So I would check that podium for like a raw onion or some no more tears. I mean, it's not really believable. I mean, and the award goes too. We are in award season.
All right. Now, you know, it's funny, again, like I said, when we talk about Chicago, man, like, especially when we talk about gun violence and everything else, one of the first examples that ever comes up is Chicago. And I know Chicago is a right-wing punching bag, so to speak. Anytime you talk about crime, Chicago comes up. You want to talk about gun violence, Chicago comes up, right? And so with Andrea Tinteros, man, like, she to assert that a man couldn't be moved over thinking about the death of children needlessly at the hands of a dude who's wielding an AR-15 rifle, that he can't be emotional in that moment and be cynical to say that, well, he hasn't shed tears for this or he hasn't shed tears for that. I'm wondering how far do we really have to be as a society, or really just sitting, like, how far cynicism has gone, to where we can watch a man cry or we can watch him tear up over the thought of dead children and think, well, he must be faking this shit. He's got an onion over at the podium and everything else. And I'm sorry, man. I just don't get it. I don't get how callous one could be to even go so far to say that, right? And there's another thing too, man, when it comes to the NRA and when it comes to Fox News and Republicans and the right wing, when it comes to this particular issue, a lot of y'all are being really fucking unreasonable. You know, the only thing that the president has been asking for when it comes to guns as far as this particular action is concerned was expanded background checks. Now, the last I checked, every gun I've bought, I had to have a background check for. Every last one of them. And it didn't take me no longer than 10, 15 minutes in order to have that background check completed. There was one gun that I had to, that I bought where I had to wait. I had to wait 3 days, and that was when I bought my AR-15. Background check was done, but they wanted to make me have a cooling off period to make sure that, was this something you really wanted to do, dog? Right? So I had to wait 3 days. I had to have them call me back to say, yeah, okay, you can come pick up your gun. And I had no problem with that. I really, it wasn't a thing where I was just like, you know what, you are fucking violating my rights, goddammit. Background checks is what we're really going, this is what we're pissed off about. I have absolutely no problem with submitting myself to a background check. Most law-abiding gun owners have absolutely no problem submitting to a background check. But the NRA, and I'm going to say this too, I am a member of the NRA. Them motherfuckers a lot of times just ain't speaking for me. And they're not speaking for a lot of members, unfortunately, when it comes to things like this. Because background checks isn't our biggest thing. Excuse me. It's just not our biggest issue. But they would make you think that the president is going to confiscate your weapons. I mean, I saw that town hall meeting that the president did with CNN and Anderson Cooper and everything. And it was weird to watch him say, I'm not coming after your guns. And then someone would come back with the very same question to ask him, well, why isn't this a way to take away my guns? Right after he explained that this isn't about taking away your guns. Now, as far as like concealed carry laws and things like that are concerned, those are state issues. The president have absolutely no control over that. Those are states' issues. Sometimes I kind of wish that the government would take a bit of a broad swath. If I'm licensed to carry in Michigan, I should be licensed to carry in any other state. The same way I'm licensed to drive a car, right? I should be able to carry. But that's not up to me. That's not up to the president either. So, yeah, man. Andrea Tarantos, whatever the fuck her name is, and everybody at Fox News and the right wing and the NRA, you guys are the asshats of the week.
Yo! We got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Now, it's going to be odd for me to kind of like bring up good gun news, right? Following that, to bring up good gun news after speaking about that. But we do have an instance of good gun news to kind of talk about, man. There was a story about someone attempting to rob a guy at a gas station here in Detroit on the west side, I believe. And they turned the tables on this cat.
We begin this half hour with a would-be robber having the tables turned on him.
When a gun was pulled on a customer at a Detroit gas station, that victim fought back. 7 Action News reporter Jonathan Carlson with more from the west side.
All's quiet now at this mobile station at 7 Mile and Myers, but not so early this morning. The story begins with a man walking up to the outside service window to buy some smokes. Moments later, another guy comes from behind.
Pulled out his gun. Pointed at him, said, empty your pockets.
The customer was having none of it. He turned around, pulled out his own gun, and shot the would-be robber dead. The store clerk behind the window.
He was stunned just like any of us would be.
We spoke with the manager of the store.
We've been here for like 30, 40 years, and nothing like that has ever happened.
Locals heard the gunshots and are abuzz about this one.
It's poetic justice. I mean, you know, you come to do something, you know, that heinous, that malice and just that raunchy to another person, and then he flipped the script on you.
Police are looking at surveillance video to piece this together. It's unclear if the shooter will face charges. On the west side, I'm Jonathan Carlson, 7 Action News.
All right. Yeah, man. Leave folks alone. Leave people alone. And so when I talk about, you know, carrying a gun and everything else, man, again, it's pretty much just for this very reason. It's pretty much just for that very reason, man. Leave folks alone. That's the general message of the good gun news. Leave people alone. You don't know who you're fucking with a lot of times. Leave folks alone, man. Real talk. And that's our good gun news for the week, right? Yeah, man. Now, another interesting thing kind of happened over the course of the last couple weeks, man. We got news that Tim McGinty, the Cuyahoga County prosecutor in Ohio, did not secure an indictment against the officers who shot down Tamir Rice in the park, right? And it was interesting how the level, like the way in which the protest kind of switched up. Right. The level in which the protest switched up and how folks started asking LeBron, like it got to a point where folks were talking about LeBron James and him being a disappointment when it came to this Tamir Rice thing. Right now, LeBron James was asked about the non-indictment of Tamir Rice's killers. And he said that he wasn't, you know, knowledgeable enough to speak on it, right? Which is what most of us should do. Which is what most of us should do. If we don't know what the hell we talking about, sit your ass back and shut the fuck up. Right? That's what we should do. But a lot of times we can't help ourselves. We speak on a lot of things that we don't necessarily know about and everything else, right? And so people can start talking about how much they're disappointed in LeBron and how LeBron can redeem himself. LeBron needs to go ahead and sit down and not play in any more games until we get justice for Tamir Rice. Right? And it got so far as to where even Tamir Rice's mom, I understand this mother is dealing with a hell of a loss, right? And she's dealing with the loss more than any of us, right? Because this is her 12-year-old son. And I understand the hurt, and I understand the feeling of helplessness that she may have to not only have lost her son, but nobody's going to be held accountable for it, right? But even she spoke out to the point where she said she's disappointed in LeBron for not speaking for on behalf of her son. I believe there was an activist in the Cleveland area. I think his name is Tariq Ture. And he's the one, I believe, who introduced the no justice, no LeBron mantra. But it makes me wonder, man, like how much do people expect of LeBron? Like why are they expecting this of LeBron? And is it one of those things where you would do this yourself as you call for LeBron to do this, right? And that's one of the things that I thought was very interesting. There was a lot of people, excuse me, who I know who would say that, well, you know, LeBron James got all the money in the world, man. He don't need no more money. Who are you to determine that for him? Are you willing to walk away from your job and not work anymore to say that you aren't going back to work until Tamir Rice gets justice? Is that going to happen? Is that what you're willing to do? If you're not willing to do that, then how the fuck are you going to put yourself in a position to say somebody else needs to do that because you deem that they have enough money, that you deem that they're happy enough in their position and station in life, that because of what they do and because of the visibility that they have a responsibility to you to do what you want them to do. Right? Now, I get it, man. Folks are frustrated. Folks are upset. Folks are looking for ways to hold somebody accountable, but the only person you'd be punishing in that particular situation is LeBron. You think LeBron, if anybody thinks that LeBron James not playing a basketball game is going to get justice for anything, you got another thing coming. That's just not what's going to happen. That's not what's going to happen. And it's the sense of ownership that we kind of have over celebrities, man, where you feel like you can kind of say, well, you know, he needs to do this in order for us to do to get any semblance of justice and all this other stuff. And it's like that makes absolutely no sense. Especially if you're not willing to put your skin in the game. You go on strike too. That's right. Everybody goes on strike. Do what you would ask him to do before you ask him to do it. And, you know, again, like I said, when it came to Tamir Rice's mother, it's sad, man. It's unfortunate, man. My heart hurts for her because she's dealing with the loss more so than anybody else. A lot of us are hurting for her. We aren't speaking for her as much as like even when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement, as much as I'm in support of that movement. Hey, man, like. That woman is dealing with something that we particularly aren't. And she has to bear the brunt of it. While sometimes folks can be using Tamir Rice's name to further their own agenda. Sometimes. Not saying that's the case here. But sometimes that can happen. And so, in calling for LeBron James to sit out games, to be more vocal and do all of these things, take a cue from LeBron James to educate yourself on an issue before you say any damn thing. And two, don't ask anybody to do something that you yourself aren't willing to do. If you aren't willing to put your skin in the game, don't put anybody else's skin in that game. Do what you would say you want somebody else to do. I mean, it's pretty much a simple thing, man. I don't think it's really that deep of an issue to where you can't really wrap your mind around that. do what you would call for LeBron James to do and put your skin in the game in much the same way that you would ask him to do, man. But to watch this kind of unfold, to see people now all of a sudden bashing LeBron James, it was, and that's another thing too that I thought was real interesting. Like, remember that whole thing where everybody was talking about how like LeBron James donated all his money for these college kids and everything to send these kids to college? And everybody was talking about, you know, the level of LeBron James' activism. How he wore the "I Can't Breathe" T-shirt for Eric Garner. How he wore the hoodie and the Miami Heat. And they all wore the hoodies in remembrance of Trayvon Martin. And now all of a sudden, people are questioning LeBron James' level of civic duty. Because in this one moment, LeBron James was honest and said, "Hey, man, I don't know about what's I'm not versed enough to say." Now everybody's like kind of turning their back on him a little bit. Not everybody, but to see that the way that dynamic shifted is a bit interesting for me, man. Yeah, man. But now time to get into what I really wanted to get into. It's really time for me to kind of like cleanse my soul, so to speak, and wash away this Bill Cosby shit. Because I'm gonna be very honest with you guys. I am sick of talking about Bill Cosby. I have been speaking about Bill Cosby a lot the last couple weeks. A lot. And to a point where I know I was irritating a lot of people. Probably gonna be irritated with this particular episode too, but I don't give a shit. But I know I was speaking a lot about Bill Cosby on my Facebook, on Twitter. And I actually had somebody who was a buddy of mine from college who came at me on some, basically he was trying to tell me I need to be talking about something else, right? Like, yo, man, like, are you going to talk about anything else in 2016? Man, all you talking about is Bill Cosby. Like, you talked about Bill Cosby all last year, which is a bit of an overstatement. I didn't talk about Bill Cosby all of last year. I talked about some of the specifics of the case as they came up last year, right? I talked then. It wasn't an all-year narrative with Bill Cosby, but whatever, right? So I'm talking about Bill Cosby, and he goes on to say, well, you should be talking about something else. And one of the things that always kind of pisses me off is when somebody tries to dictate to me what I should be talking about. I'm a grown motherfucking man, dude. I will speak to what I feel is important. And I've done that. I've done that. Every time when I get on this mic, anytime I get on my social media, if I feel like it's something that's important, you're going to hear me talk about it for days, sometimes for weeks. I think this is just that important. Because to be quite honest with you, this discussion is much bigger for me. Is so much bigger than Bill Cosby, right? So, you know, one of the things that I've been kind of doing is, you know, I've just been pushing back on some of the ridiculous defenses that come up on behalf of Bill Cosby, right? That's been my thing, to kind of like poke holes and make you look stupid for some of the ridiculous defenses that people bring up when in concerning Bill Cosby. And one of the biggest things that always came up that I thought was absolutely ridiculous was the fact that every time somebody talked about Bill Cosby, they talked about these rape victims and they talked, or these sexual assault victims, or these people, these women who have come forward, 57 in total, to say that Bill Cosby wronged them. That the reason that this was happening was because of the purported purchase of NBC, right? Which was ludicrous, by the way, right? I mean, you look at the fact that Bill Cosby's fortune is a little bit over $400 million, and the fact that when NBC finally did sell, when NBC was finally sold, that they sold for over $6.5 billion, that, yeah, it was a pretty ridiculous notion to think that Bill Cosby was going to buy NBC, right? And then it goes into the fact that when they talk about this NBC that Bill Cosby was going to buy, that he was, you know, he was in the middle of, you know, doing the Netflix special, and he had this new sitcom coming out, and he was in the, you know, the NBC thing is coming. I'm thinking to myself, well, damn, what kind of network did y'all think Bill Cosby was doing that they felt like they had to stop Bill Cosby from doing this? That they had to concoct a story of 57 women coming forward to say that Bill Cosby wronged me sexually. Like, what network was Bill Cosby cooking up where the powers that be said that Bill Cosby can't be trusted? We can't allow this to happen. And you know, I'm like, yo, man, y'all need to cut that shit out, man, with this whole NBC thing. But you know what? You know what? Some of y'all were right. I was wrong. Bill Cosby was about to buy NBC, y'all. He was about to buy NBC. And I got a hold of a promo clip for the new network. It was called BCN. It was going to be called the Bill Cosby Network. And I got a hold of a promo, an audio clip of the promo for the Bill Cosby Network after the sale of NBC went through and Bill Cosby got a hold to NBC and he renamed it the Bill Cosby Network. Check this out.
Welcome to the new BCN, Bill Cosby Network. On BCN, you'll get fine programming and access to the legendary Bill Cosby's finest work in comedy specials. You'll get classic black cinema like Boss Nigger.
Fred Williamson is Boss Nigger. They call him Boss.
Boss Nigger. Hard-hitting documentaries that show the true history of black people. The Hidden Colors series.
No matter what people say about me, you will always see me with a dime, an upscale black bitch, if I fuck with one.
Wrong clip.
Hidden Colors, the untold history of people of Aboriginal, Moor, and African descent. The groundbreaking documentary that challenges conventional knowledge.
Also, you'll get new shows from the likes of Eddie Griffin with his new show, Still Dysfunctional.
Dr. Cosby, rate 37 bitches and still counting. Nobody leaves this business clean. Michael Jackson, fuck little white children.
Faison Love with It's All Love.
You supposed to pick me up anyway.
Give a fuck? You still left the little homie on stuff? He in the hospital with his ass in a sling.
You cannot say fuck in front of people.
Give a fuck?
Look, man, I told you I ain't had nothing to do with that, man. Homie,
why
pick
you
me up.
Why you moving hands like that? Keep your hands to your motherfucking side.
Man, homie pick me up. We got pulled over by the police. He gets out the car and start dumping. I ran. I mean, what?
I ran? I mean, what?
I'm tired of this shit, nigga!
Damn!
Oh,
I didn't make you do that.
The new Bill Cosby Network, the BCN. Are you niggas ready?
Yeah, man. He was doing it. Bill Cosby was about to buy NBC and call that shit BCN, Bill Cosby Network. Real talk. You can go check it out. Right? Yeah, man. So that was my thing, man. Just poking holes in the ridiculousness of some of these defenses of Bill Cosby, right? But, you know, one of the things that I was trying to one of the things that I was trying to do was to bring attention and make this a much larger discussion, right? And the larger discussion that I wanted to talk about was the idea of consent. And what consent is, and whether or not, whether or not there's even a such thing as implied consent and actual consent and everything else, right? And it was weird because part of the reason why I got in so many discussions about Bill Cosby and, you know, we were talking about rape and we talking about these statistics as to how the, how low the likelihood that 57 women would be coming to say that Bill Cosby wronged them in some sort of way. And you have to understand when we talk about the not only the statistical evidence against Bill Cosby, but then you think about the fact that someone of his power, someone of his level of influence, someone with his amount of cash on hand, right? He's got power, he's got money, he's got influence. For someone to come forward against someone of the stature of Bill Cosby, you'd have to wonder, why would they come forward when they're going against someone who can destroy their life? Can destroy their life. If it comes out that Bill Cosby is found not guilty, or he's found not liable in a civil suit, These women leave themselves open to having their lives destroyed, right? So you got to think about that. You have to think about that. And I've said before, and I've said it many times, that part of the reason why I believe that Bill Cosby did it was because of the statistical evidence of how low the percentage is of women who have false accusations, or of the rape accusations that do come forward, of the amount of women who have come forward, and the consistency of the stories as it relates to Bill Cosby, and Bill Cosby's own damning testimony in the 2004 deposition that resulted in the charges that he's facing now with Andrea Constant from that 2004 incident, right? So there's that. But my biggest thing was having this conversation branch off into a much larger thing that absolutely had nothing to do with Bill Cosby, but to examine what we mean when we talk about consent, right? Because one of the unfortunate things that I kept noticing was people, mostly dudes, and sometimes women, but mostly dudes, who would talk about, well, these women knew that Bill Cosby was married. You know what? Bill Cosby also knew that he was married. Well, they came into the hotel room by themselves. Okay? Coming into a hotel room does not mean that the woman loses agency over her body. Well, they took the Quaaludes and he didn't force them to take the Quaaludes. Okay? Taking a Quaalude does not mean that she loses agency over her body, that she can't refuse, that she can't say no, unless, of course, she's incapacitated and she can't respond anyway. If she decides to drink, she took a drink from Bill Cosby. He didn't force them hoes to drink. Again, if she accepts a drink, that doesn't mean that she loses agency over her body. It doesn't mean that she now has no ability to say no, unless, of course, she's incapacitated and can't resist anyway. So this thing is, you got a lot of dudes who think that just because a woman is down to come to the room, that she's down to go smoke, that she's down to come drink, that she's down to come do whatever drugs that you're doing or whatnot, right? That now gives you, that she just gives up all agency and that she's ready to do whatever you want to do with her, right? Make no mistake, a woman can be butt naked in your bed, face down, ass up, unless she gives you permission to touch her sexually, you committing an assault, bruh. You committing an assault. And the biggest thing that a lot of you motherfuckers need to understand, a lot of you dudes need to understand, is that your freedom depends on it. Your freedom depends on it. If you don't want to have someone say, hey, I don't know what the fuck happened. Why am I in this bed? I wasn't in the bed before. I was in the living room. Why am I in this bed? Hey, dude, where are my panties? Hey, why are my clothes halfway off of me? Why are you playing with your dick over there? If you don't want someone coming to while you're in the throes of your thing, you probably need to just leave them the fuck alone. Leave them alone. It's really that simple. It's not that hard. And it's amazing to see so many people kind of justify a lot of shit, right? Just justify a lot of shit. Like, and of course, like I said, I've heard women kind of like, you know, say some of the things, some of these same things too, you know, that these women went to the hotel rooms with Bill Cosby. They were by themselves with Bill Cosby, that Bill Cosby was married, and that these women knew that he was married and they engaged in all these things anyway, right? And it kind of makes me think of, you know, that sometimes, you know, in the same way that we can kind of internalize a bit of racism, that we can also internalize misogyny as well, especially for women, that they can also internalize misogyny as well. Well, you'll speak on behalf of the patriarchy to your own detriment, right? That you'll speak on that. Or that there are also women who were victims of sexual assault, who haven't told anybody, right? Let's get this clear. There's a lot of women who've been victims of sexual assault, haven't told anybody. They've kind of dealt with it on their own. And they look at what these women are going through and they kind of project themselves and how they dealt with it on these women, right? So, you know, you'll have a woman say, hey, why did this woman wait 30 years to say something? She might as well have not said nothing. You know, I actually had a conversation with a young lady yesterday where she kind of told me that she was a victim of sexual assault and that she hasn't come forward yet. And she sees no point in coming forward because she doesn't know it'll do anything. She doesn't have evidence. She doesn't have proof that he did anything. So what's the point in coming forward? Which is why it's important that when a woman does come forward, it gives the courage to yet another who may have been victimized by that very same person to come forward as well. Right? And I felt sorry for the sister, for her to feel as if she's, I mean, I get it. She's dealt with her suffering, but to think that it would be pointless for her to pursue justice. That's how beaten down women are. Even to the point where they'll beat other women down for saying something. For coming forward and saying something. Right? And so, you know, I know a lot of times, you know, guys kind of lean on those women, you know, like, yeah, see, she been assaulted. She ain't said shit. It's like, nah, bro, you ain't understand. You don't understand the power dynamics behind a lot of the shit that's going on there. Right? So, you know, sometimes a woman can kind of, she can kind of internalize a bit of the misogyny that's going on. The same way that a lot of black folks can internalize a bit of the, a bit of racism. Which is where a lot of respectability politics come in. Because we start believing in our own pathology and we start believing that we as a people are inherently fucked up. And unless we start doing things that are palatable to white people in order for them to respect us, as opposed to us being who the fuck we are with no apologies. Damn what white people think. You know what I mean? Sometimes we'll internalize these things. So, you know, my biggest thing, the biggest thing that I was trying to discuss and to get on people's minds is this, the idea of what consent is and to ingrain it in every man who's listening to my voice. Ingrain it in the brain of every man who is listening to my voice, what the idea of consent is and what it isn't. A woman you buy a drink for in the club does not mean she owes you pussy. A woman who you buy drinks for and you bring her home does not mean that she owes you pussy. A woman that you take out to eat does not mean that she owes you pussy. A woman who smokes with you does not owe you pussy. A woman who does anything with you unless she tells you it's a go, she don't owe you shit. And your freedom depends on this message. Your freedom depends on it. See, one of the things that I find very interesting, man, is we talk to our young girls, we talk to young ladies, we talk to women all the time about how they are to keep themselves safe. Right? How they're to keep themselves safe. I supply my wife with a gun. My wife... that's one of the ways in which I do it when I'm not around. A lot of women are told to make sure that they're in groups, that they're never by themselves, that when they even go to the bathroom, that they go to the bathroom in groups. You've seen that. We make jokes about the fact that when women go to the bathroom, they go all together. That's a security mechanism. That's how they protect each other. A lot of times a woman will say, they'll call a girlfriend and say, hey, girl, I'm going over such and such house. His license plate number is XYZ572. His address is 123 Main Street. And he dark skinned. He got braids and he wear FUBU, whatever. They'll call their girlfriend and they'll give a description of everything about this motherfucker that they know. Right? We don't do the same thing with young men. We just don't. We don't implore upon young men that consent is important and how to go about obtaining consent, how to romance a woman or how to just live in the moment, so to speak, not to force anything, not to force yourself upon anybody, not to feel as if anything is owed to you. We don't do that with our young men to the same degree. And so what I felt like was that as I was having these discussions with people of varying ages and varying political leanings and living in different places across the country, as we talked about Bill Cosby and a lot of these different subjects start coming up, is that, yo, a lot of people just simply don't have an idea of what consent is. And it's an important discussion that we need to have. So when I talk about Bill Cosby, or when I've been talking about Bill Cosby, and rest assured, like, I'm tired of talking about him, so to speak, because for me, it's so much bigger than him. It's so much bigger than him. When I talk about these things for weeks on end, it's because I believe it's that important. And nobody's going to tell me that I need to be fucking talking about something else until I decide that I need to be talking about something else. I didn't get the same sort of reaction when I talk about Black Lives Matter, right? Because we kind of all agree to a large, you know, to a large portion of us, especially with some black men, especially when we talk about police brutality and everything. If I talked about police brutality all day long, I bet you a lot of the same niggas who was mad about me talking about Bill Cosby would have no fucking problem with me talking about how much these police are out here fucking up. No problem at all. But it's because I'm talking about this particular issue here that a lot of people get a little bit uncomfortable, especially for a lot of brothers. We get a little bit uncomfortable. We start trying to find commonality with what Bill Cosby did to minimize what happened with Bill Cosby, right? So, like, I'm having dudes hit me up with different discussions about, hey, Span, ain't you ever brought a chick some drinks or something and brought her back to the crib or whatnot? You ain't never done that? And yes, I've brought drinks. Yes, I've had a woman over to my home before, and we drank. But to try to find commonality in what me and, or try to say, well, you know, well, that's no different than what Bill Cosby did. And these women are just, you know, he's rich, so they're trying to get money. And he's, these women have buyer's remorse and all this other shit. It's like, nah. You don't get 57 motherfuckers to come forward and say you did some foul shit to them just because they got buyer's remorse. Or they're trying to get some money in this way, right? We just have, I was having a conversation, me and Mr. Gates, we was having a conversation over the phone. As a matter of fact, no, it wasn't even over the phone, it was on Facebook. And he kind of intimated about coming forward and saying he was raped by Oprah Winfrey. And I told him to go for it. Put some skin in the game. Put some skin in the game. If you believe that these women are coming forward and they're all lying, they ain't got nothing to lose. Put your skin in the game. Go ahead and accuse Oprah of doing some foul shit. And see what comes back. You know, it's interesting. You'll have a lot of guys, you'll have a lot of people talking about how they are, well, I'm not for rape, man. I'm not defending rape and everything else. I'm not defending that, no. But, and they always say, and that but always goes into tearing down what rape victims say happened to them. I'm not defending rape, but tearing down what a rape victim says happened to them, right? And we'll overstate all of these false accusations. Now all of a sudden, everybody knows somebody that was falsely accused of rape or sexual assault. Everybody knows them now, right? And it's very interesting to watch unfold. But as we talk about this, as I start to kind of wrap this shit up, for me, this isn't even so much about Bill Cosby anymore. It just isn't. It's a much larger discussion that needs to be had that I don't think necessarily people are having this discussion, especially for young men, young boys. We don't have these discussions with these young men and these young boys in much the same way that we have with daughters, nieces, young cousins. We're always telling young women how to protect themselves. We're not necessarily having these same sort of discussions to teach our young boys how to avoid being put in that position where they feel like this is a go, and it really isn't. That's what I'm getting to. So, I mean, whether Bill Cosby is found guilty or not, you know, I'm of the mindset that Bill Cosby will probably walk in much the same way that R. Kelly walked. R. Kelly walked and there was a video fucking tape, right? So I'm resigned to the fact that Bill Cosby may not ever see a day in jail, right? But at the same time, the discussion needs to be bigger when we think about consent and how to protect women from predators. Or not even someone who sees themselves as a predator, right? Because nobody wants to see themselves as being a predator. But we've done some shady shit. And that's where I think a lot of the defense of Bill Cosby comes from. A lot of us, you know, done some real shady shit. And like, if what Bill Cosby did was rape, man, I'm in trouble. That's what a lot of this shit is. That's where a lot of this shit comes from. If what Bill Cosby did is rape, nigga, I'm in trouble, nigga. Right? That's where a lot of this shit comes from. But the larger discussion needs to be had when it comes to our young boys, young men. Don't put yourself in a position to where you're taking something that doesn't belong to you and you weren't given permission. You weren't given permission, bro. And that's the biggest message that I want to have for people listening to my show, listening to my voice right now, is that just don't do it, man. Just don't do it. If she sleep, leave alone. If she drunk, passed out, leave alone. She high as fuck, leave her alone. Leave her alone. That's the message that I want to send to you guys, man. And I know it's not going to always be well received, but it is what it is, right? But it's my responsibility as a member of my community to say what I feel is right. And that's what I use my platform to do. So, yeah, that's what it is, man. But it's almost time for me to get out of here. But before I go, I want to read off some listener feedback. And the only listener feedback that I have right at this moment is the poll results from thespanreport.com. And the last time I talked to you guys, man, or actually not the last time, but the last time I presented a question to you guys and I left a poll on the Span Report was I wanted to find out what exactly you guys want to hear from the Span Report come 2016. And the results are in. And you guys have the option of more guest interviews, more music, more Art of Disagreement episodes with Mr. Gates, Mrs. Span, my wife, or more episodes during the week. And the number one option was more episodes during the week. More of you guys want to hear more of me during the week. Now, I'm going to try to make that happen. It's going to be a bit tough because I do work a full-time job. So I'm going to try to make that happen. But 38.8% of the respondents said that they wanted more episodes during the week. And number two, 27.7% said you guys want to hear my wife on the show. So, yeah, man, I'm going to definitely try to make that happen. I got some things actually in motion in the background right now to where a couple of these things may actually take hold. We're going to see. I would definitely love to have my wife on the show. And of course, I definitely want to speak to you guys more throughout the week. It's just a matter of the logistics behind it and, you know, being able to have the time to do it, you know, so definitely we'll take heed to that. The other options that you guys had also more guest interviews. You guys want to have more people on the show. And I'm definitely stepping up an effort to get more folks on the show. I actually have the homie Montoya's from the Shooting from the Hip podcast, who's supposed to join me here. I'm definitely trying to get that set back up. And of course, you guys are going to have Mr. Gates on the show. I'm definitely going to reach out to Rod and Karen over the Black Guy Who Tips and Brandon from Where's My 40 Acres and Deidre from Where's My 40 Acres and Chonilla. I'm trying to get at everybody, man. And also, like people like my man, Wendell Tucker, who is a playwright in Chicago. I would definitely like to talk to him about his ideas about Chirac and everything else. So I'm definitely thinking about a lot of different things and taking your feedback to heart. The other thing was more Art of Disagreements. 11% of the respondents said they wanted to hear more Art of Disagreements. And 5.5% of you guys said you wanted to hear more music. So, yeah, man, I've got my work cut out for me for 2016. Man, like I began the show and I said, It's going to be a lot of opportunities to do a lot of amazing things. And I look forward to talking to you guys throughout the year about a lot of the shit going on, right? But yeah, man, it's time for me to get on out of here. But before I go, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course, I'll play them on the show and respond in kind. You can also email me at the feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those voicemails, not the voicemails, the emails. And of course, I'll respond to those live here on the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both platforms is Mr_Span. Hit me up on both of those platforms throughout the week. Also, Ass Hat of the Week submissions, send them here. asshat@thespanreport.com. That's asshat@thespanreport.com. All of your Ass Hat of the Week submissions should go there. Not on Facebook Messenger, not on Twitter. Send them to asshat@thespanreport.com. Preferably 5 stars on these iTunes and Stitcher reviews. Those are the ones that get read on the show. But please leave your man Span an iTunes review on and a Stitcher radio review. And it's your way of putting it on the show, and it helps the show grow, man. So thank you in advance for all of you guys who do that. And for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. Leave me those comments. Vote in the polls at thespanreport.com. Watch the podcast on thespanreport.com. Listen to the spanreport.com. To the podcast on thespanreport.com. I'm getting tongue-tied here. Everything's available at www.thespanreport.com. But yeah, man, happy new year to each and every last one of you guys, man. It's going to be an amazing year, and I can't wait to walk you and talk to you guys through it all, man. So until next time, fam, peace.